I am your host, Steven, and you are listening to the Learn Swift Podcast, where beginners to the Swift language share their background, experiences, lessons learned, and ambitions. So this is going to be the last episode of the season, and I thought I would bring back a previous guest, Mark Opont, who recently got a position as an iOS developer. He had moved to Queens, New York to chase his dream of being an iOS developer from the Orlando area in Florida, and he recently made that win, and I wanted to bring him on the show to talk about that before we signed off for this season. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So how's it going out there? So you got your new job. Is it living up to your expectations so far?
So far, so good. I can't complain. It's one of those things that, you know, you can plan and think that you know exactly how things are going to be, but it's different when you're finally in the position. And I can honestly say that it's been amazing. And just the potential for where I'm going to be in the coming years is like, is even more amazing. So I'm excited.
That's awesome. So when we were talking last time, this was back in the summertime, I want to say, or late summer, somewhere around there. It feels like it's been forever now, but, right. But you were on the job hunt. Cause we had a discussion, yes, about what interview practices were like and whatnot. What other kind of progress had you made in that job hunt before you made it to this position? Like what other kind of experiences did you have out there?
So as far as the job hunt goes, that continued to be I don't want to call it a struggle per se, but it was a little challenging only because this was like my first real attempt at breaking into the field. The thing I noticed before was I was like on the job hunt and not on the job hunt at the same time, because part of me felt like I didn't want to, I was giving myself some time to prepare. So like I would apply to some jobs some days, then other times I'd be like, I'm just going to kind of fall back a little bit and just let things happen natural. And then I'd get back on it again. And so it wasn't as, I think part of my delay was due to it was my own fault in the sense that I wasn't as aggressive as I needed to be. And I think eventually me becoming more aggressive is what eventually led to me landing the gig that I currently have.
Okay. So you would say you were like kind of like essentially taking a break, learning some stuff, maybe working on something and not giving your full attention to the actual job hunt. You were trying to get a job, but you weren't really dedicating all your energy towards it.
Yes. I think that's a fair statement. And a majority of that as well was I wanted to make sure that I didn't get completely discouraged, because part of the job hunt, unfortunately, you have to reach a lot of no's before you get a yes. And so part of me kind of had this mindset of, you know what, every single no that I get means I'm that much more closer to a yes. However, you kind of want to, you know, in my mindset, I wanted to minimize the amount of no's I take on at once. Because just like in anything you do in life, like if you get too many no's, it could affect you in a negative way where you start to feel like, well, you know what? Since I'm getting so many no's, does this mean that this is not meant for me, or am I not ready, or things of that nature? And I didn't want to put myself in a position where those type of thoughts would creep up. So I felt like I needed to balance the whole process with, you know, a little bit of a search and then a little bit of downtime to actually really recuperate from either applications that I sent out or interviews that I've been on, to ask myself, all right, what did I learn in this process? What could I have done better? Was there a question I was asked that maybe I didn't answer as well as I should have? Is my resume not up to par? What does my LinkedIn profile look like? Things of that nature. So having that break in between kind of gave me a chance to really kind of strengthen my presence and my resume and things of that nature that kind of eventually, you know, lead to so many other things. So.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, with any kind of venture, really, whether it's a business or, you know, trying to find a job, anything, you've got to realign your strategy based on experiences. And you could, I don't want to say not getting a job is a failure, but you can view it as you did not reach your goal. Maybe the company wasn't a good fit, you know, for either one, but right. you look at it as, okay, these were my weaknesses, and this is what I see as the reason why I didn't get an offer or make it further through the pipeline. And then, so like you do that in anything, like with marketing, if you're not getting your, you know, whatever kind of response you think you're getting, you got to reevaluate how you're marketing your product. And in this instance, you're marketing yourself. So you've got to do that. So I think that actually makes a lot of sense. And you know, I've been on job hunts, not even yet for, you know, developer work, but I've been on plenty of job hunts, and it's emotionally taxing.
It is.
Because you put so much time and effort into not just the resume, but, you know, cover letters. Did you do a lot of cover letters?
I did. I went through the whole shebang, cover letters and even initially at one point I had like resume critiqued and writing, and it's just, I mean, I really did as much as I possibly could to kind of put the best foot forward, mainly because I just know that, unfortunately, with a lot of these positions, as I'm sure we'll kind of get to as we discuss, a lot of times you just need to get past that first. You just need a break. Let me put it that way. You need to get past the first level. And a lot of times, if you can cut through what most companies or most employers would kind of make you go through in that first level, then generally you can be, for most people, they'd be in a good spot. But, you know, at the same time, I get why certain employers, based on the amount of traffic that they take in, amount of people applying, things of that nature, that they need something rigorous enough to really just slice the numbers in half and get rid of half of the competition or whatnot. And unfortunately, if you're just not one of the strongest candidates, it's very easy to kind of get cut for no reason. When in reality, if they were to actually ever meet you in person or get in front of you, you'd be like almost an immediate hire. But you can never make it to that point because you never made it past the first filter, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. Usually I do pretty good in interviews. A lot of times, usually where my trouble usually getting in is with the initial screening, like making it past that. I forget what they call them now, but where you send your resume into the black hole. Mm-hmm. I think I've only gotten like one or two callbacks from sending my resume into that dark abyss of submit your resume. But most, I would say just about every other job that I've gotten has been through either networking, or I was actually able to get in touch with a company recruiter directly. I haven't found another job. I've tried the other ways and I haven't gotten a job that way. And that's just in general. And I'm sure the same is pretty close to true with any other industry.
Absolutely. This, I can honestly say that this, me landing this job was 100% networking.
So how did you come across this job?
Oh man, where do I start? So let's put it this way. A lot of people always hear about, you know, how important it is to, like, for example, when you're within the dev community, iOS, web, any sort of dev, like Twitter is it. Like if you're not on Twitter, you've already lost, first of all. And now I can honestly say I'm not much of a social media person, but I also realize that when you have certain goals that you're trying to reach and you're trying to reach certain heights, that there are certain things that are necessary in order to help give you a leg up and help get you in there. And I can honestly say from a dev perspective, being active on Twitter and communicating with folks there is like step one, because what Twitter does is it opens up the doors of communication to not only just seek work, but just get to know people. And in the process of getting to know people, that opens up the doors for them to say, hey, by the way, I know you were looking for a job. My company's hiring. Or I know a friend of mine that's looking that asked me for some folks. Send me your resume and I'll forward it over to them. But that comes through a lot of times some sort of relationship. And that relationship may be from someone you met at a meetup or people that you're just tweeting about common things on Twitter, whether it be dev related or completely unrelated. Being able to leverage like social media to kind of create networks and get to know people, I find is very important. So for me, what essentially happened is sometime back in, well, okay, let me start from here. So I was on the job hunt, kind of searching around and doing my interviews and things of that nature. And essentially things weren't going as fast as I wanted them to. So in order for me to kind of help get the momentum, because I always knew that from the get-go, I wanted a development role, even if it was maybe even web related, I would go down that road only because I felt like the key piece was to get into a development role, a full-time development role at that, that would really help like foster skills and really just help me collaborate with other people and just learn. Cause I already spent a lot of time learning on my own and working on side projects and things of that nature. And I wanted to be around other people. And I wanted to be around other people who love doing what they do while building great products and learning at the same time. That was really the whole goal. So essentially what happened was through the process of interviewing around, I'd say like it was like October-ish timeframe. There was a post, there was, one of the devs that I follow, his name is Craig Clayton at DevMe on Twitter. Awesome guy. He had made a post saying that he was looking for, does anyone know of any classes or programs that are looking for mentors? Because he was looking to be a mentor and, he was like, you know, checking to see if there were any boot camps or any things like that where he would be able to submit and or work in that capacity. And I decided that that was an opportunity for me to say, well, you know what? I can't offer you a job per se, but I am looking to be mentored. And so I kind of, I commented on his post and I said, you know, hey, I'm looking for a mentor. And he took me up on that and actually private messaged me saying, hey, there's this Slack that I'm a part of that, that I feel like you may be able to benefit from. Here's a link, join this Slack and at me when you get in. So I said, okay, cool. The Slack was a Slack called, Blacks in Technology. And it was just kind of, really a group of just engineers from all over the world. A majority of them were, African-American. And, he said, hey, join this group and check it out and let me know what you think. And so sure enough, I get in the group and, I messaged him and he's like, hey man, what are you looking for? What are you trying to do? Like, where are you at in your search? And we just start dialoguing. Mind you, he has a, Craig has a academy. I believe it's called Coco Academy, that he runs in Tampa, Florida, where he teaches like the basics of Swift and not just Swift, but iOS development in general. He's also an author, writes some books. And so he started to kind of dialogue on like, what was I looking for? What were my strengths? And really started to just have some dialogue with me. And he eventually kind of pointed me in the path of like, hey, well, here are some items of what you need to check for or make sure you can at least speak to this. So that was one, how could I say, element or event that put me on the right path of how I should target my iOS search a little bit better. And sure enough, through the process of making that post, there were multiple other people that commented on Craig's post saying, hey, have you checked this place out? Have you checked that place out? And through that post, I also ran across a gentleman by the name of Daniel Dunbar, who works at Apple on the, what's the team? I want to say it's the Swift Package Manager team.
Yeah, I believe I have heard of him. I've heard his name mentioned a few times on other podcasts, actually.
Yep. So he actually reached out to me as well through a private message and said, hey, you know, I saw that you posted that you're looking for a mentor. What exactly is it that you're looking for? It kind of caught me off guard because it's like, okay, you think you know you need a mentor. Or I want a mentor, but it's just like, what exactly do you want out of that mentor? Because you can't just go tell someone like, well, I just want you to get me a job. Because that's not a right way to go about doing it. And it wasn't so much that I wanted a job. Part of me was just looking to say, well, how is it that I can properly set myself up to be successful at getting the job? Because I know I have a lot to deliver, something powerful to deliver, and I'd be an amazing asset on any team, but I just need to be able to get past, you know, unfortunately in New York City, the core need for iOS devs is mostly senior. And if you're not senior, you forget about it. That at least that's been my experience through the process. And most of them, like, you know, want essentially 30 years of Swift experience. And it's just like, wait a second. Swift ain't even been around that long. But that's just one of those things that, so, you know, that piece was frustrating. But so sometimes, unfortunately, and when, you know, it's hard to navigate those paths without having some insider help. Let me put it that way. And so we got to, you know, conversating, and he said, you know, send me your resume. And sure enough, I sent him my resume, and he was just, you know, man, here's some things that you need to fix. Here are some things that I would look for. Here's some things. And he expressed how he wanted to be an aid to the community, and he really wanted to kind of help in some way. And he felt that by maybe, you know, speaking to me or assisting me, that would, you know, be a contribution for him. And I greatly appreciate that, because it was one of those things that he was another person that was able to look at my resume and say, hey, I would add this, I would remove this, I would tweak this, so on and so forth. And, you know, whether I knew the guy or not, the fact that he worked at Apple, I'm like, well, he must know something.
Right.
And he would be able to at least, you know, be, while he's not necessarily an iOS guy per se, he'd be able to at least kind of point me in the right direction. And sure enough, it just started an avalanche of like help. Long story short, I eventually get to this Slack channel, the Blacks in Technology Slack channel, there is a job section where, a lot of folks just post various jobs, whether it be their companies or whatever else is going on. And one of the posts happened to be a post for a gentleman that's now my coworker, Jamone Kelly, posted a job listing for a Swift engineer at UMAP. And sure enough, I said, well, let me check this place out, see what it's like, go online, do the research and kind of see what the app's about. And I said, let me just go ahead and throw my hat in the ring. Just like any other time I applied. Really kind of just left it at that and went about, you know, applying other places and going to interviews and such. And long story short, through interviewing process, here I am today as a iOS engineer for UMAP.
That's awesome. So I want to unpack a little bit what you had said before. And I forget the name of the first guy that you said that you said his Twitter handle was at DevMe.
Craig Clayton.
Craig Clayton. Okay. And you said that he had given you some information, like stuff to focus on. What was some of that?
Well, so some of it was in regards to like essentially like what sort of what's your target goal of what sort of job are you trying to? Are you looking to be, work at a startup, or are you looking to do more of a full time, not a startup, but like a corporate sort of deal? Like, what was your focus? Because I think his thought was more so in trying to narrow things a little bit and not necessarily make the gap as wide, but also understand why you're looking for what you're looking for. In addition to just, we talked about, what did we talk about? I believe we talked about certain things like what sort of APIs are you familiar with? What sort, and how are you targeting the companies that you're going towards? So we kind of had some conversation back and forth on what are you studying, and specifically what kind of job are you looking for? Like, because if you go to a start, there's a different approach and different expectations for working at a startup versus working for more of an established company. And there are those, both are looking for different types of people as well. So you have to also determine what do you have to offer, and which type of entity or organization best suits your needs based on what you have to offer. That's, I guess, the best way for me to sum it up. So, for example, in most cases, most startups, kind of hard for junior people, so to speak, to get gigs at startups because, well, especially smaller startups, because of the fact that they have a product that has a very small team. And with those very small teams, they may not have the ability to have the bandwidth of training or holding a hand or holding someone's hand as they get up to speed so that they can contribute towards the product. Whereas a more established organization may be able to have the bandwidth to say, okay, you know what, we can take a newer guy on because this, you know, we have a little bit more bandwidth and we have the ability to, you know, train up a little bit and kind of help this person grow. So those were kind of some of the things I had to learn along the process of the search.
And so I'm guessing, so you're working at a startup now. I'm guessing yes. You determined that a startup would have been the best environment for you. Did you come to that conclusion?
I did, mostly because for me, I think, you know, the whole reason why I even started this whole process and even went down this road of development was really to do something that matters. You know, I worked for my previous company for 12 years. I knew what it meant to be an employee. I knew what it meant to go to work and do a job and get paid to do that job. To be honest with you, I could care less for that because I felt like, you know, there's so much more to offer in life than just to go someplace and just kind of maintain the turning of the gear, so to speak. And I felt at the moment that being at a startup would give me the ability to really kind of have some serious skin in the game, so to speak, and really be able to have whatever idea or thought that I had, like, be actually implemented in the end product. And I'm actually working on something that's like a legit feature, as opposed to maybe potentially being in a position where I get a gig at a bigger company, but I'm working on like a very small, minute task. Now, I will say that I'm not opposed to that type of gig completely, only because I also realize that by being at a bigger company, you're also exposed to more, right? And you have more access sometimes, and you have more room to grow that you may not get at a particular startup because you're just focused on, you know, trying to get, you're really trying to get a product up and going and out the door and make it stable and make it right. Whereas an established company maybe has figured that piece out and you have some room to maybe go on a completely different tangent and do something different. If that makes sense.
Oh, no, I completely understand what you're saying there. I'm of the same mindset, where just doing the job to make the cog keep on turning isn't really that appealing to me. And my job before last, when I was working in the oil field, I got to do some pretty exciting new stuff and set up my own product line and actually make it set up the way that I would want to set it up. I was essentially ran my own little product shop, and it was amazing. It was probably the best experience I ever had because I was the boss. Like, I had a boss, right? But
right.
I made everything run with quality and efficiency in mind, as well as, you know, getting stuff out the door. Nothing really hindered it. And I always made sure that I could get product out the door as well as, you know, make sure it's a good quality product at the same time. And then after I had to leave that job due to the turbulence of the industry, it's like then I found myself in that cog mode. And that's really where my unhappiness came. Like I loved my job before. And then I found unhappiness in like these other positions where that previous employer really just they gave me that position because they knew that I could think on my feet and I could do stuff and like they didn't have to hold my hand. And it wasn't even that I was knowledgeable in a lot of that stuff. I came off the shop floor as an assembly person, right? I was working, and then they were just like, "Hey, Steve, we think you are capable of doing this, so do it, and we'll give you a pretty awesome pay raise too." But having that freedom to like really just like do things the way that you feel it contributes, right? I'm not doing stuff willy nilly just because I think it's just a way to do it and that's how I want to do it. You know, you take ownership of it.
Yep.
You don't have anybody to blame. You don't, like, the only person that you can blame is yourself. And in this job, in my last job, which was it just completely different. And when in a lot of places that don't welcome that kind of thinking, that they just want you to be in a box, that's it's very depressing.
Yep. It can be. And unfortunately, you know, I think it all depends on what stage of life you're in and what you're searching for, because, you know, obviously there are plenty of people that still work at organizations that kind of, you know, what put you in a box. So it's not as if like this idea of being put in a box is like this loathsome thing that nobody in their life does. So there's obviously a time and place for that. I think it's all determined based on where you're at in life and what you're currently looking for. I just happen to be in a position. I remember being in the interview, for the company that I'm currently with now and telling them like flat out, like, I'm not looking for a job. If it's a job you have to offer, I already have one. I'm not looking for a job. I'm looking for an opportunity to do something that I love, and be around people that are just as passionate as I am. And oh yeah, by the way, I also get paid for it. That's what I'm looking for, but not some place where I'm going to come in, clock in, you know, and make sure I'm in my chair at this time, make sure I take my lunch break, leave my lunch break, and then clock out. Like, not looking for that at all. That doesn't entice me whatsoever. I think there's, and part of me having that position is because I know what I have to offer. And I don't think that the best use of my time and what I have to offer would be magnified in a position where I'm just kind of come in, clock in, do your job, take your lunch, leave, go home, do it over again. That's just not for me, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that. That's kind of kind of where I'm at right now. And I try to, it's like, I'm always coming up with ideas and crazy shit to, I need to bleep that out. but you know, I'm always trying to, like, inventory is a huge pain right. in the rear.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, that's my job. And I've always, whenever I've been in control of inventory, I make sure the processes surrounding inventory are good processes that don't mess up inventory. Unfortunately, the place that I work, nobody's ever thought of inventory when they're making the processes. Unfortunately, I don't have control over the vast majority of these processes. So I have to talk to the process owners, which are people that, like, they might have some experience in their particular field, but there's actually not a single person in my facility that has actually managed an entire manufacturing process from beginning of sale to shipping the product and being in charge of all of those things in between, and actually having to see firsthand how intertwined these processes really are. So they don't think about the side effects of that, of like what they do. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like whenever it's almost like you have, it's like when you make a function with no arguments,
right.
but then you're actually changing parameters and state in that function. It's like, well, what's going on here? Because you look at the function signature, and there's no inputs. But then when you look at the body, then you find out that you're actually changing all this state without actually declaring it. So right. That's what I deal with on a daily basis. Like with inventory, I find out that these processes are actually doing something like ignorant with inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty much like a janitor for the inventory mess that kind of happens. So it just kind of drags on you. And then you tell them the importance of it, but like at the end of the day, they don't really care. And these are the managers, right? These are the people that are running the show. And like I've tried every single different approach to like make it like stick. And then at the end of the day, it's like, well, Steve, you're the inventory guy, so you figure it out. It's like, well, I did figure it out, but the problem isn't with me. It's with your processes. And right. I can't just go in your process book and change things, because there's stuff in there that I don't know, right? I'm not the technical ins and outs of these products. I can't just go and change a certain process. It's got to be a collaborative effort, but they don't do that. And right. I've tried to get it. We've gone through, like, I've only been here a year and a half. We've had three different people that have been at the head of the company. Mm-hmm. We're on our third one right now. It's just exhausting.
It's one of those things, man. Sometimes it's always unfortunate when you have to, when you're in a position where those above you do not necessarily know the best way to even manage you as a person, right? Because they don't truly see your full potential. They just see the job that needs to get done, and you just need to do that job. And don't get too crazy with ideas or anything outside of that. Just do that job, because that's just what they want to do. And that's a lose-lose situation for anyone, so.
Yeah, it really is. And what I'm working on right now, you know, I decided to, I'm going to stay in my box, but I'm going to make my box the best box in the company, right? Absolutely. So I'm going to make sure that all my processes are the best that they can be. And then instead of trying to focus on the entire picture at once, I'm just going to focus on my box. I'm going to make my box the best cardboard box in the entire building. And then once I got all my stuff squared away, then that's when I'm going to be like, look, this is everything that I've got. This is why inventory is still messed up. This is why it's going to stay messed up. And it's nothing that I can do without your help. So,
yeah. But. And that's, you know, in a lot of ways, very similar to kind of what my situation was like leaving my prior company and coming into this role is just really, you know, I needed to make sure that I was the best that I could possibly be before leaving, and making sure that I did everything possible to leave in a good manner, And then just once I was done and everything was really ready for me to transition on into the full-time iOS side of things, I did that. But I only did it when I was really, really ready to do it. And I made sure that everything I could do at my previous job was like squared away beforehand.
So how did you, speaking of transitioning, and we'll stop talking about my stuff, what was the transition like? What, when you came to your, you know, boss, what did you say? How was it taken? I imagine it's always an uncomfortable conversation to have.
It was a very, well, let me put it this way. It was, I went into it with the mindset of, oh my God, I'm dreading this thing. I'm talking about, I'm losing sleep, sweating. Like, what am I going to do when I finally tell, when I finally put in my 2-week notice? Like what, you know, this is going to send, this is going to cause ripples, because I was fortunate enough to be in a very well-respected position within my prior company. Like I was really good at my job. Me leaving, was not going to be a gap that was going to be easily filled. So those were all things that I took into consideration, because, you know, you don't just up and wake up and leave a company that you've been with for, you know, 12 plus years. I started as like a co-op / intern at the company. And 12 years later, I, you know, worked my way through the ranks in different, you know, variety of roles. And, you know, you build family and relationship and things like that along the years. So just getting up and walking away is not easy. But I also know it needed to be done, because I was very comfortable. I was in a comfort zone where things were on autopilot. And unless I did something to change it, you know, I would never probably leave. I'd just be so comfortable that I'd say, you know what, why should I mess this thing up? My bills are paid. My family's taken care of. Just keep doing what you're doing until you're done. And that's it, you know? But I knew that there was more. So I remember sending off the, was it an email? I don't know if it was an email or a phone conversation that I had with my manager at the time saying, hey, we need to talk. You know, it's like that dreaded boyfriend, girlfriend talk, like husband, wife talk. And
it's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's me. And, you know, the crazy thing is, like, when I had the conversation with him, he was very candid and just like, man, you know what? I kind of saw it coming, but I was hoping that it would, you know, stay away as well. Like, you wasn't really going to do it yet. But, you know, I can honestly say that he made the process so much simpler, because he was just like, man, listen, I get it. I understand. So let's work on the next steps to make sure that you leave properly. And that was that. And I can honestly tell you that I was shocked, because here I am thinking like, man, this is going to suck. I feel so uncomfortable. I'm talking like pacing around the living room on how am I going to word my departure? Like, do I say that I'm leaving because of this? Like, how do I word? Like, I was stressing over this thing, man. But it was because I really felt like it was important to do things the right way. Even though I, you know, had worked on this iOS goal of mine for so long, and I was so ready to be doing iOS full time, I still needed to close my chapter properly, because that's very important to me. You know, I consider myself to be a person of character, and I really wanted to make sure that my character or reputation wasn't damaged on exit. So, you know, I gave my company, it was almost like a 3-week notice, actually, because I was like, you know what, I got to go above and beyond. I know I only owe them 2, but I really want to make sure that I leave them properly and make sure things were set. And sure enough, we had that conversation. And of course, I didn't have that conversation until things were legit, like position in hand, like acceptance, you know, offer letter accepted, all that kind of good stuff. Cause I wasn't going to go, you know, put in my notice and then like, all right, it's, especially because my interviewing process was not going as great as I wanted it to be, that I felt like I had to be a little bit more calculated in how I set things up. So I made sure I had my ducks lined up first. And then once I knew things were like really getting serious with the interview process and there was potential, you know, I went ahead and put my notice in, and that was that.
I completely agree with leaving gracefully. You know, like even if you get to a point, like even the job I left to come to the one I'm at now, I would say that was probably the most unhappy I've ever been at a job, because I did something that was just so monotonous. I was doing purchasing, and I had done purchasing at my previous job, but I was doing it in a more engaged way where I was like, you know, negotiating with suppliers, and I was, you know, working out specs with engineers. You know, I was like doing like these, you know, collaborating and like, you know, trying to and putting out bids and stuff like that. And that's what I thought that purchasing was, more or less. And then I kind of found out that was actually more of a sourcing thing. And so I found my way into a purchasing role that was literally just like, hey, we need to order this stuff from this company. And then, you know, it was all for resale. I worked for a e-commerce company for about 10 months. And that was probably and then on top of that, my commute was a minimum hour and a half to hour and 45 minutes a day. Like just like one way, actually. So it was like total 3 hours commute minimum a day. And I was utterly miserable. But when I found this job, like I did the same thing that you talked about. I made sure that I had all my ducks in a row. I waited till I had a start date.
Right.
I said like once everything's cleared, 2 weeks from that date. Cause you know, I'm not going to risk anything. Like maybe there's something, maybe somebody like with my same name did something stupid and you know, there's something that comes up on my background report for some reason, who knows? There's a whole host of crazy things that could happen like that, just off the wall. Once I did that, this company actually had a habit of like firing people that put in their notice. Right. Or like, so that was another reason why that I wanted to make sure that all my ducks were in a row, because worst case scenario, I could get that start date bumped up.
Right.
I took my manager aside and I was just like you. I was like sweating bullets all day. I just trying to figure out the best time to talk to her about it. And I just like when she came in, I said, hey, so and so. Can we go talk somewhere private, please? And then so we did. And I handed her my resignation letter. And I said, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, the time working here. It's not really about, you know, this place. It's, you know, I took a pay cut to come here and then on top of the commute, and this is a lot closer and more of what I was making previously and kind of more or less aligned with my skill set, I believe. And, right. You know, they actually, she let me finish they ended up only making me work a couple more days and then paid me for the rest of my time. Like, so I gave them 2 weeks notice. Wow. They paid me for the 2 weeks. I didn't have to go into work. So I had a week off in between jobs. Wow, so that was, awesome. And then every time I've left a job, I pride myself on the managers always saying, you know what, if it doesn't work out, we've always got a door open for you. So I think that is really important to do, because you never know when you might have to go crawling back.
You never know. And I've learned in my process of networking and things of that nature that it just, you know, certain doors may open up and, you know, people are related, man. It's crazy how like you can be talking to somebody and like the person that you worked at a previous job, their cousin is like a manager at the job that you're going to and you didn't even know that. And they're like second cousins. And it's like, you left in shambles at the first job. Now they're looking at you sideways. Maybe you had an opportunity to get your interview was going good. They find out that your name is such and such, and then you're related to such and such. And then it blows up for you. So for me, I really wanted to make sure that things were, things went well. Not to mention the fact that it was, you know, it was somewhat of a stressful process, because getting back to like what I was saying before. So I applied at this, I was applying at different places, and I finally, when the interviewing or hiring wasn't going as good as I wanted it to, I opened up the, you know, filter a little bit to, you know, start looking at more, you know, maybe possibly front end, back end sort of roles that weren't necessarily directly related to iOS and Swift. And so I landed an interview that like I really like I went through. Actually, this was an interview that I was going through a talent search or recruiting agency. And they got me this interview at another startup in New York City that was just like awesome startup, top, you know, leader in their field. It was more of the ad tech space. And I mean, I went through the full interview process, which was a long, gruesome, I want to say gruesome, but it was a long process. Like the final stage, by the time I made it to the final stage, it was like a 4-hour interview, I guess, which is like a typical like tech interview, but it was like whiteboard and everything.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was. So it was just like our interview. It was like a 1-hour problem solving, like an issue, a problem that they give you and you solve the problem. And then after that, it was like these 30-minute blitzes of like someone coming in for 30 minutes. And they grill you, and then another person comes in and they grill you, and then there's whiteboard, and I mean it was a gruesome process. But I had already known that the fact that I had even got to that part of the interview, like things were looking good, and so I was like, okay, well maybe this is going to be it. And the crazy thing is, even through that process, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, so if this role does come back good, am I going to be willing to, like, is this going to be the role that I'm going to ride with for a while? Because it's not iOS related. And I've been working on iOS and Swift for like the past 2 years. So like this is going in a different direction. Am I okay with that? And I had kind of gotten to the point where I was thinking to myself, like, well, you know what? If I made it this far, it must be meant to be. So keep going down that direction. And that's actually when I found out about the UMAP, the company that I currently work for. And sure enough, like at the very last second, I get a request for an interview. Mind you, like I'm in a very delicate position because I've already kind of almost somewhat, I get past the interview for the first gig and they literally like gave me an offer and I kind of somewhat said yes. So now here I am in a position where it was just dry bones, nothing for a while. I'm going to putting in applications out there. I'm getting nothing. And then I end up in a position where it's like I have two offers on the table and one of them I already said yes to, but I actually want the second one. And so like it became one of the most stressful pieces of my life. Only because I felt like I was in a conundrum where the moral character part of me said, you know what, you already said yes to the other group of folks. So you just need to go with that job. But I would go to sleep after going through the interview with UMAP. I was just like, oh my God, this is like an iOS role. The people seem really awesome. They seem really fun. This is a cool, cool deal. I think this is what I've been working on. This is what I've been working towards. So that night I couldn't sleep at all. I was tossing and turning because here I am. I said yes to this other gig, but now I finally have an offer at an iOS gig. And so I knew that the following day I was going to have to make a tough call because, you know, it's kind of one of those things where once you say yes, then it's like, you know, within 24 hours or whatnot, they're getting ready to send paperwork to start the process. And it's just like, I need to do something about this. And so long story short, like, I get to the interview with UMAP and it's crazy how things work because in the end, I did not even write one single line of code in my interview with my current company.
Wow.
Yeah. It like, and it gets to, I guess what I meant to, the story or the kind of point of the whole thing is that when certain things are meant to be, the same hoops that you might've gone through in previous cases won't always happen that way, because I had already gone through so many different whiteboard and just different sort of interviews where things had not worked out well. And I think what happened is when I finally got to my interview with UMAP, like, we connected on a level that was so much higher than code. And that was really what eventually opened up the door for me to be in the position that I'm in, because the code piece had spoken to itself, right? My GitHub, I had multiple projects on my GitHub. I could speak fluently. And I think if any of the people that probably hired me had to speak and kind of told me in afterwards, kind of one of the reasons why they went with me was they felt like, one, I could speak fluently about Swift and about iOS. That was one. So being able to speak fluently about it and being able to have certain projects lessened the need to go down the road to go break out the whiteboard and let's go run these algorithms and do all this testing. So then it became more of, who are you as a person and how do you best fit this team? Which I already know that if we get to that sort of a battle, that's a win-win for me 100% of the time. Because I know that from a personality perspective, and if you give me that opportunity, I win that battle every time. The only battle I lose is when you start to get into the technicalities of things, of how long have you been doing this? How deep is your knowledge on this API? And you start, things that to me don't really matter, because there's certain things that, like, especially I've come to find out with certain iOS APIs. Look, if I end up working on an app that uses core location and I don't know core location at the time, I can go look that up and read about it and learn about it. The key piece is, do I know the fundamentals and am I teachable? That's always my mindset. But obviously not every employer is going to agree with that. But there's certain things that, in my opinion, I feel like are hoops that folks make you jump through for no reason. Because when you finally get down to the nitty gritty of doing the job, when the opportunity comes for you to implement certain things, you go look up the documentation, you read about it, and you implement it. It does not mean that you know every single thing out there and you know every single API, which is what I feel like some interviews and recruiters kind of put you through. Like, well, you should know this and should know that. Well, no, I know the basics. If I need to learn it, I can learn it. But that's really kind of how things ended up working out for me, where it was a tough position initially to be in, because I went from nothing to having two on my doorstep. And I think the hardest part of the whole process was when I had to finally call company A back and say, yeah, I know I said yes, but I'm going to have to pass on this. And I think there's a lesson to be learned even in that process, because in the process of doing that, I did it in such a graceful manner that afterwards I actually had a meeting with one of the engineering managers and the recruiter that was at that previous company. And they just wanted to really just have kind of like this almost exit interview. Like, we just want to understand, like, why you didn't accept our offer and everything looked good. We like you. You look like you liked us. Like, what's up? Essentially. And I flat out told them, like, I said, man, listen, I'll be honest with you. Like, there was nothing wrong with your people, nothing wrong with the team, nothing wrong with anything that you guys did. I need to explore this avenue, because, you know, I got an opportunity to work doing something that I've been preparing for so long. And I felt like my skills would be better suited with that than it would be coming into this particular role. And I was flat out honest with them. I said, you know, I'll be honest with you, this whole thing can blow up in my face. I could end up taking this other role and it end up being something that's like was completely the wrong move. And I gave up your guys' offer and that offer falls through and then I'm back to square one. But I need to see this thing through. And if it blows up in my face, then so be it. And that honesty was enough for them to say, you know what, man, we respect so much the way that you handle that process that should you ever become open again, will, you know, the door is open for you to come through here. And that was to me like an amazing thing to hear, because I was sweating bullets over the whole thing. And to be able to know that being honest and forthcoming and just explaining the way I felt really kind of put all parties at ease. And it was a, you know, somewhat of a win-win situation. And it put me in the role that I'm currently at the company that, you know, I love and doing what I've been working on and passionate about. And now I get to, you know, do that all day, every day.
That's so awesome. I'm super happy for it. As soon as I heard about it, you know, I reached out to you. I think I may have seen it on Twitter. I may have come across your Twitter profile, and I saw it said like iOS dev at UMAP or something like that. And I was like, oh man, Mark got a job as an iOS developer. And I hit you up and you're like, oh, it's only pretty recent. So, you know, I was super excited hearing that you had gotten that gig. Can you talk about what your day to day is like, as a new iOS developer?
So day to day is, you know, we're a pretty small team. So day to day is really just when I came onto the team, they were literally just kind of coming out of, and some were somewhat still in a beta phase. And so it's really bug squashing and feature implementation. And so really day to day, I get an opportunity of either going through and working on different bugs that we may have or different features that we have coming up in the future. And just kind of iterating through that and just bouncing ideas with the team and kind of doing that. So I write code all day, which is what I wanted. I mean, it gave me, I was already, you know, to be honest with you, Stephen, like it's one of these things where I would have done this job for free. And the truth is, I was already somewhat doing this job for free because I worked on multiple side gigs and contracts sort of deal for other startups, like, you know, where it's like, okay, help us build this product, so on and so forth. In addition to just studying and building apps of my own. So for me, working as an iOS dev is mostly just getting paid to do what I would have done for free anyway.
That's awesome. I'm super happy for you. What was it like getting up to speed on the code base? Was that kind of an undertaking? What was it like diving into code that you've never seen before? Because that's something that I occasionally, when I like look at like a GitHub project, sometimes I feel a little overwhelmed looking at like, you know, different code files, and it's like, okay, what's this class? And then I got to go look at, you know, the pretty much the tree of all the files, and then go back and like, oh, okay, that's what this class does. And it's what is that process like, especially onboarding as a new developer?
So the onboarding process was a little tougher than what I thought, but you know, that was mostly because of just a lot going on in the process of me coming on board, and a lot of changes that were happening. You know, that's the thing that I've come to learn about, like, startup culture is change is inevitable and change happens frequent. So like there's a lot of changes that happen. And so you have to be moldable. You have to be flexible to kind of bend as things go. And so I happened to come on when things were kind of being established, and that made it to where that there wasn't as much of an opportunity for me to just sit down with somebody for like a week and just go through all aspects of the app. So there were a lot of nights where I just spent, I was able to, before I completely came on, they had actually given me access to the GitHub. So I was able to kind of gave me like a soft task of working with actually Realm within the app. There were a couple of bugs regarding Realm. They're like, hey, so your task is go through the app, find out where Realm is implemented and kind of, you know, make some adjustments to that. So it was kind of it was more of an opportunity to get to know the code base on my own and then kind of ask questions as I needed to. And you know, it was rough initially because, you know, when you're looking at code that somebody else wrote, especially if that code may not have been written in the most easiest of ways, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve that comes with that. But, you know, with enough time and going through it, it really kind of eventually became fine. It's just one of those things where it just really just takes time. And I think they knew that me coming on board wasn't just going to be like this. Okay, by next week, I'm like, know everything about the app and I just have everything down to speed. But it was just going to take some time. And I'm still learning about the app, but I know much more about it now than I did when I started, you know, last month. And so it's just one of those things that just really just took time doing exactly what you just talked about. Looking at the implementation of the different files, launching the app, using the debug, debug hierarchy to just kind of just let me add this breakpoint. What are these values at this point? What is this app doing at this point? What is this protocol for? What is that for? And just really kind of documenting as I go. So for me, what helped me really learn the app is go through certain pieces of the app, hit this breakpoint, and write out everything I'm thinking of at that moment, like almost creating my own self-documentation. And little processes like that really helped me become familiar with the app and get up to speed enough so that I can actually start contributing towards features, as opposed to just, you know, hitting the initial soft task, so to speak.
Okay. So we're running long, but there's also a couple other things that I want to talk about if you've got time.
Sure.
One of them, I know you wanted to talk about on our first episode, and it was about underrepresented groups in technology.
Yes.
I believe that you wanted to talk about. And, so let's talk about that. Cause I know that's something that's near and dear to your heart.
Yes. So part of, in everything that I do, I feel like, it makes no sense to have a gift or have a skill if that gift or skill is not being put to use to help out someone else. And it's very important to me to ensure that in everything that I do that, honestly, I learn to teach. That's really what I do, why I do it. And being able to, for me, landing this gig just gave me more of an opportunity to learn at a faster pace so that I could teach at a faster pace. And I've used that in different ways, not just in teaching Swift, but just teaching in general. And part of that comes through with just different meetups that I've become part of. Like there's another meetup that I think when we were first talking, I'm not sure if I was a part of that particular group, but Coding for Queens is a meetup in here in New York that specifically caters towards teaching folks how to code and getting them up to speed, but in areas that are kind of forgotten about. So Queens is wonderful. It's the largest borough in New York City. It's pretty much, there's a lot of rich history here. But when you think of code and when most people think of New York City, they think of Manhattan, right? That's like the mecca of where it's all at. And right. Because of that, that also means that all of the meetups and all of the, you know, tech related events happen in Manhattan. And I always felt like, you know what, well, what about the people that are here in this neighborhood? Don't they deserve to learn the code too? And that's what for me, I felt like doing any sort of teaching, especially for like minority groups, groups that might not otherwise have access to some of the tech and code. I felt like me being able to be fortunate enough to land a gig or be a developer, like I am that group's access. Because I feel like it's a responsibility on my part to go back and help someone else get in. I mean, at the end of the day, it was through the help of others that got me to this road, whether it be Craig Clayton or Daniel, or also another guy on Twitter at Bug Crusher. His name is Jazzbo. He helped a lot with, he's also a moderator in the iOS developer Slack group on Slack. And he was another guy that I met. I finally got a chance to meet in person at the Tri-Swift conference in NYC. And I remember seeing him on the stage, thinking to himself, like, man, you know, most of the time when you go to most iOS related conferences, or you see some of these conferences in tech and programming, the diversity is not always there when it comes to tech and programming.
Yeah.
It's just not. And so for me, I was fortunate enough to have attended the Tri-Swift conference on a diversity scholarship, and being able to see him on the stage as like his story being someone that he attended the Tri-Swift conference as a diversity recipient and came back to the conference, and his company was a sponsor and he got a chance to be a host. And so his goal, he said that he went back to his company. He said, you know what, man, I want the opportunity to make this happen for somebody else, and I want you guys to sponsor a ticket for that. And his company held good on that promise and did that. And ever since then, when I saw him do it, I said, my goal for the next year is to come back to this conference, not as a scholarship recipient, but to pay for my ticket, come as an iOS developer, and have whatever company I'm paying for sponsor someone's ticket. And so that is currently my goal. I've already achieved most of that by, you know, becoming the full-time dev. Now it's just a matter of making sure that I hold my company to the fire to provide a ticket, because I think it's important to, it's one thing to make a product that, you know, earns money, or say, you know, run a business and do all that kind of good stuff. But in the midst of that, if you're not helping people, you're doing pointless work. And so I really feel like it's important to help those and give people an opportunity, because I want to be able to see someone else like myself who might not have otherwise been afforded a certain opportunity to have a chance. Because for some people, all they need is a chance. That's it. They don't need anything else, just a chance. So I feel like it's important and a responsibility for myself to make sure that if I'm ever given the opportunity, as I have been, that I help someone get a chance. And that's what I'm doing.
That's awesome. That's pretty beautiful. I think I don't really have a whole lot of words for it. It's just, you know, I think that it's, like you said, whenever you look at the community, it's not very diverse. Right. And at a minimum, it should be the spread of diversity should at least be the what the diversity is in the country anyways, or at least the area or something like that. You know, if you've got 30% of one group, 50% of another, you know, that should be reflected in the community across pretty much any kind of profession or level of employment or whatever. You know, that's the goal, really, right? To be equally represented as it is in the population. I completely agree with that. And I think that's awesome that you're trying, essentially, I guess, pay it forward with the opportunity that you got to try and get somebody else in that same position.
Absolutely. That's always the goal for me, is to really help give someone an opportunity that might have otherwise not have gotten an opportunity. And mostly because of the fact that I know that sometimes you just, like I stated earlier, you just got to get past that first door. And once you can get past the first door and people are no longer looking at just your stature or who you are, or your race or your sex or any of that, and they actually see what you have to offer. Like, I can code, I have a different perspective, because to me, I feel like it's, you know, that was another thing that was important for me. Like, no matter what job I went to, like, diversity was key. If I walked into an interview and everybody looked the same, I don't care what job it was, I'm walking out. Because for me, I want to be able to be part of something where it's not just one voice being spoken, but multiple voices are being spoken at once and multiple voices are being heard. And there's something to say about the diversity of a team by having women on the team, as well as men, as well as people from all over the world. Like, they all have a different take on a problem. And the more diverse your team is, the more possibilities you have to solve a problem. But if everybody on the team is of the same type, then you're always going to approach that problem the same way, and you're not going to have as many options to solve that problem. So I feel like diversity is it's common sense to have a diverse team. And if as long as I have anything to say about it, I always want to make sure that there's always all voices can be heard, because everyone has something to contribute. And everyone has something to say. It's just a matter of us kind of deciding to look past the lens that we normally look for when we are hiring or looking at certain things, so that we don't miss out on great people. Right now, we're in the process of, you know, bringing on some folks with our particular startup. And I made sure that, you know, I told our founder, like, hey, listen, while you guys are in the process of doing your hiring, like, don't get too caught up on one particular area, because if you do, there are chances that you may miss out on somebody that could have very well served the team in a great way, but you set your filter way too high and you missed out on somebody that really could have had a chance to contribute towards the team and provide a perspective that you weren't even thinking about. So that's always, you know, my little soapbox of just really making teams as diverse as possible and giving everybody an opportunity to contribute, because you'd be surprised what people have to say and what they have to contribute towards a problem. You just give them a chance to share that.
I agree. When I worked in the oil field, it's actually surprisingly very diverse. Had people from all over the world. Like, I think we had a guy from Egypt, a guy from Nigeria, we had engineers from Europe, and like this is in Wyoming too, like, right. Of all places. like you've got this eclectic mix of people working on, like, you know problems with, you know, oil wells together. It's just kind of like, you just like, when I think about it now, it's just kind of like, you know, people don't think of diversity when they think of Wyoming. I mean, let's like, you don't, but that, yeah. Company was pretty crazy.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, you were also, doing Learn Swift Queens. Are you still doing that?
Yes. Yeah, so, it's not going as fast as I wanted to, because I ran across some, you know, issues with locations. That's kind of like always the hardest thing to do, is really landing a location to host the meetup. So I'm in the process of trying to diversify. Like, I've been looking into like libraries that I can partner with. I've kind of been doing the Learn Swift Queens in coordination with Code for Queens, which is the organization that I teamed up with to just teach a variety of code, from React to front end development, back end, just code, any sort of code, where we kind of mixed together, because we had the same sort of goal in mind. And they needed a teacher. I needed a spot. I needed a place to host a meetup. So it kind of became like this, well, why don't we join our forces and just teach all together, in a sense, where they could help me with the organization location aspect of it. And I could help with being one of the folks that would actually teach, you know, whatever the topic is that we would want to create. So one of my goals for 2018 is to really kind of hit the ground harder with Learn Swift Queens, and like really not let the whole location aspect of things bogged me down, because it'd be so much easier for me to host in Manhattan. I have multiple people that have reached out to me. Even one of the recruiting agencies that I work with, they're like, "Hey, if you want to host a meetup, we can host it in our space here." But it's in Manhattan, and doing anything in Manhattan is against the whole idea of why I wanted to start something in Queens. It's because I want to serve the people that may not have the largest voice or may not have the opportunity to be part of the big crowds in Manhattan. They just want something in their local neighborhood of Queens.
And then you couldn't even call it Learns of Queens anymore.
Then I couldn't even call it Learns of Queens anymore. So that's kind of the idea behind it. It's an uphill battle, but I feel like once I finally figure out the sweet spot of a location with that battle, it'll be smooth sailing from there. And in addition to that, you know, it made it hard for me to contribute as much as I wanted to, because I was so heavily invested in the job search and preparation of the job search and things like that, that in addition to just being a husband and a dad, like, it takes up time. And so you get spread thin sometimes, and you got to, you know, scale back a little bit to kind of get yourself normalized, so to speak. So my goal definitely next year is to really, you know, take Learn Swift Queens to like the next level. And really, as I've learned more, I mean, the resources that I've picked up along the way, have really opened up my eyes to just programming and Swift in general. Swift is a very powerful language. Once you start looking at things outside of the scope of just building a app in Xcode, there's a lot of little nuances of the language that I must say, for folks who I'm not even getting paid for these plugs, I should, but Paul Hudson with Swift, he has a series I think it's called Hacking with Swift online series, or it was a series of live series that he did. And he sold the book, where it has like 10 different videos of just like, he went through like a 4-hour session of just a whole like Swift pro tips, functional programming, Xcode tips, debugging. I mean, that book is such, it's more so a collection of videos. Man, that is such a gold mine of information that I learned so much just in using Xcode instruments and Xcode to like profile your code and really analyze where you could have like performance issues, and learning all these little quick little nuances within Xcode that I feel has made me a better developer. Little things like that. That's the stuff that I want to be able to share with my folks at Learn Swift Queens, to really not just get outside of the element of just building an app, but really understanding the iOS ecosystem and understanding the Swift language, so that you use it more so as a tool to solve a problem, not just as a language to build an app. If that makes sense.
Oh, that makes total sense. And I think that's really cool that you're encompassing those other aspects and essentially meta skills, I guess you could call them, for, you know, building applications or, you know, solving problems, as you said, because, you know, one problem may be your app's not performing as well as you thought it should be. And that's not necessarily something that can be easily solved without using profiling tools.
Right. And a lot of it also has a lot to do with just, you get there. I feel like every developer gets to a point where you watch enough the videos and you read enough books where, like, okay, you've learned what you need to learn. But in order for you to get to the next level of kind of mastering the language and mastering what you need to learn, like, you have to learn some of those soft skills. Like, don't get me wrong, Xcode has its issues, right? It has its little bugs where sometimes Interface Builder doesn't do this, or it crashes, or the simulator doesn't launch. But like, I've grown to find out that like Xcode is a ridiculously powerful IDE. And when you learn all of the other little tricks behind the scenes of using conditional statements with breakpoints, and how to find out how many How many methods, let's say you have a function in your code and you want to determine, man, how many places is this function being called or is it being used at all? As opposed to just trying to do like a control C because you could do a control C, control V, paste it in the finder and just see how many times being called, but being called does you no good if you're trying to, how many times being declared as opposed to how many times it may be called. Well, there are tools in Xcode that can help you determine like this method is being called by these three classes and it's embedded here and things that I would have never really thought of. I mean, sure, you can watch a video on how to create a table view, how to create a custom cell, how to do it. But when that's all said and done and you're done with that, you're going to come across a problem where you know you wrote a function for something, but you don't know, man, am I using that function? There's this crash that's happening, but I can't figure out why it's happening. And being able to understand the tools and understanding Xcode will help you solve that problem in a way that you might not have otherwise. And so I make it my plan. I'm not saying that I know everything about iOS or know everything about Swift, but I figured I got to a point in my learning where it was time to stop doing the learning as far as learning the language. Because, okay, I got the language. But let me really learn the tool so that I can make my job a lot easier. Because a lot of times it's not so much that a job would be hard, whether it be like, let's say you're like a carpenter or you're a mechanic and you're working on a car. If you have the right tools, there's certain things that you'd be able to, that would normally take you 3 hours, you can do in half an hour. And I think with Xcode, a lot of devs, especially devs early on, need to learn to not just learn how to code, but learn how to master the tool. Because if you learn how to master the tool, a lot of the pitfalls that you'll run into when debugging or when trying to figure out why your app's not doing what it's doing, they're not going to have anything to do with Swift, or they're going to have things to do with Swift. But being able to let Xcode help you find those things, they're invaluable. Let me just put it to you that way. The things that I've learned about Xcode now, I'm like, yo, Xcode is really, really, it has its days, but it's a powerful tool.
That's cool. I've messed with the profiling tools and instruments and stuff like that a little bit. I haven't really gotten too far into it, but definitely need to check that out a little bit more. If you send me the resources that you use to learn that, I'll make sure to drop that in the show notes for everyone to take a peek at.
Absolutely. I'll definitely drop that in there because that was a very awesome book. I like Paul Hudson's way of going about things. And
He's very straight and to the point. I think he doesn't, there's not a lot of cruft around what he gives you the meat of it and all the important stuff. And then from there you can figure out how to make it some other way. But he definitely makes sure to make it clear, concise and to the point and still give you the most amount of information as he possibly can, which is
Absolutely. I honestly don't think the man sleeps because he's.
I don't think he does. I think he's actually a robot written in Swift.
I think that's what it is. I legitimately think it must be because his output. I bought a lot of his books during Black Friday. And so like now that on my train rides into work, into the city every morning, I'm more than likely reading a Hacking with Swift book, whether it be on, advanced debugging or functional programming or just things that I really want to kind of learn the next level. Cause I think I'm at that point now where I want to learn more pro Swift, as pro uses of Swift. And so enhancing what I already know and writing cleaner, well architected code. I think that's kind of the point where I'm at, which, there's a lot of resources that your resources tend to change when you start looking at things differently. Cause there's a lot of resources out there for like the beginning stuff, but when you want to start digging a little bit deeper, some of those resources don't tend to exist. But I'm finding that more now as I, want to learn a little bit more, You have to be willing to read and be willing to diversify your sources, which is one of the things I think I mentioned in my first, when we had the first episode when I was on before, is anytime I'm learning a topic, I always like to learn from at least 5 different sources on that same topic to really help give me like the diversity needed to understand the problem in a global sense. So that now if I'm ever faced with it again, I can approach it from 5 different angles. So, you know, Paul Huston's books have definitely been a huge help with that. There are a couple other YouTubers that I follow, guys like Sean Allen has a great YouTube channel that does a lot of, you know, different topics. Of course, you have your Brian Vooms, Let's Build That App, you know, also an awesome dude that does some really great things. So like all of those resources, including like Ray Wendelick, which I think we mentioned before, they just really help give you a well-rounded view of things, which for folks that are in the process of searching for work, the more well-rounded you are, the better. But I'd say don't get too caught up on just like studying all this code, and not forget that there's a social aspect to hiring. Like there's a people aspect, like who are you? What do you do as a person? What do you like to be around? Like those things still exist. And in some cases, like those things could be the difference maker in between whether or not you get hired for a job or not. Even if you do know the code and you passed a whiteboard and you've done all of that, like don't downplay the people skills. I'd say.
Yeah, I think that goes for just about any job too. If it's mostly, you know, how well can you jive with the rest of the crew, essentially. So if you're just kind of a stick in the mud, chances are you're probably not going to land the gig, no matter how qualified you are. But hey, Mark, we are pretty well over time, but you know, I feel like I really wanted to get some extra time in with you just because, you know, you were on here before, and you know, I'm really proud that you got and landed that job, and I wanted you to be able to talk about all the stuff that was important to you. I feel like you getting a win like that, you know, gives all of us a win too.
Absolutely.
So. I'm so happy for you. I can't say that enough.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So is there anything that you want to say before we sign off?
Nothing much, just, you know, of course, thanks for the opportunity and I love being on the podcast, and for folks that are out there that are, you know, really wanting to try to break, you know, get their foot in, like stick to it. I persevered. It took me a little while. I came from a bit of an unorthodox path of just really kind of studying on my own and then determining at some point in time that I wanted to really do this iOS dev thing serious other than just doing it, you know, on the side. And I stuck with it. And if you stick with it long enough, just know that the more no's you get, the closer your yes is. So I had to learn the hard way that you're not just going to, it's going to take a lot of application. And for some people, they may be lucky enough and fortunate enough where they just put in like 5 applications and they land the job on like the 3rd one. But for others, it'll be 100, 200. But don't get weary through the process. Like keep going through it, because eventually what's meant for you will come to pass. Like if that job was meant for you to have it, like I genuinely feel like the job that I did end up getting was meant for me to happen because like I said, I got through the interview and literally like no whiteboard, no anything. We just talked and that was that. So something like that is not a traditional interview, but it just goes to show you that it was just meant to happen that way. So I, you know, I just wanted to say that for folks that are looking and wanted to encourage people to keep pushing forward, network, don't miss out on opportunities to get to know people on Twitter, especially for the iOS realm, because there are a lot of folks out there that are looking for an opportunity to help. But, you know, old proverb says, you know, a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So if you got to get out there, put yourself out there and give people an opportunity to help you out. And if you stick to it long enough, things will come to pass. I mean, and once again, I want to be able to help out anybody that is also going through that path. So for anybody who wanted to, you know, certainly reach out to me on Twitter. I'd love to help, you know, go a little deeper for anybody who wants to learn more about my process or what I did or things of that nature. Cause I feel like it's important not to just get a gig and just stop at that, but also, you know, give back to the next, pass it forward. So.
Well, Mark, thanks for coming back on the show. And if anybody does want to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you?
On Twitter, I am at DigimarkTech, DigimarkTech. You could email me, mark@umap.com. It's probably the easiest email. And I'm pretty active on Twitter whenever I can be. So just hit me up there. And yeah, that's about it.
All right. Thanks for coming on. And before we completely sign off, everyone, I wanted to remind you all that the Learn Swift podcast is part of the Swift Coders Network of podcasts, which, of course, includes the Swift Coders podcast, as well as Fireside Swift. This will be the end of season one for the Learn Swift podcast. I am having my first child born here in the coming weeks, and I am going to take off I'm going to say at least 6 weeks. It could be more, it could be less. I'm going to be kind of flexible with it, but I will return for a season two, whether or not it's at a time that's soon or not. But it will happen. And I hope you all are able to listen to some of these other podcasts. It'd be a good chance to listen to the back catalog. If you haven't listened to Mark's first episode, I highly suggest you go listen to it. It was such a joy to have Mark back on the show, and we're all super proud of you, Mark.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And that concludes this episode of the Learn Swift podcast. I hope our discussion left you feeling inspired and that you're not alone. If you enjoyed the show, please consider telling a friend, recommending the show on Overcast, or leaving a review on iTunes. If you want to be on the show or just say hello, you can reach me on Twitter at Steven_0351. Thanks, and see you next time.